So I was here for 17 years. And today is March 5th, Shabbat, and I have followed, hoeing the same row. I'm joining with you in the Renegade Triennial Torah cycle, which may have occurred here 2,000 years ago. I have evidence of this still existing, I guess, in Egypt and in Rambam's time, in the 12th century or something. So it still was, it was petering out in the Middle Ages. And so Narkis, in its good renegade style, is
going back to it.
Is going, trying to revisit it and experience it, I guess, more than anything. Because it doesn't seem that there's a lot of, it's very difficult plowing to argue which verses are which and where to really begin, but we've taken the best scholarship, or yes, and it's going with it and using whatever is posted right on the internet. So I'm joining with you in Genesis chapter 24, and
I think it's 25, isn't it today?
Let's see, today I hope I have the right one. It's a very long chapter.
Oh, you're right.
So there's like 67 verses, and I think one of the longest prayers, at least up until this point. So we're at Genesis 24, 42 through 67. But this is like take three, right? Round three of the same material. So if you have been here for the past couple of weeks, which are not online, I tried to, do my homework to see what was said, because we're reviewing some of the exact same wording even, and some of, definitely the same material. Maybe we should review just briefly and read the text for those who haven't read beforehand, so that we're familiar with it. And then, for a moment, I would like to hear from you what has been said. How many people were here last week? Was it Gary or Sharon? This is the Gary Sharon story show, right? So, and this really is, this passage too, is really up the alley of Gary and Sharon, pun intended. So there's a lot of connections theologically, historically with these. So maybe we'll review that a little bit after we read the passage. So we can take some volunteers to read some chunks of this passage from Genesis chapter 24, verses 42 through 67. Who would like to be the first volunteer?
Sorry.
Yes? Okay, so starting in verse 42.
When I came to the spring today, that one?
Yes, starting so on. I came.
When I came to the spring today, I said, Lord, God of my master Abraham, if you will, please grant success to the journey on which I've come. See, I'm standing beside this spring. If a young woman comes out to draw water and I say to her, please let me drink a little water from your jar. And if she says to me, drink and I'll draw water for your camels too, let her be the one the Lord has chosen for my master's son. Before I finished praying in my heart, Rebecca came out with her jar on her shoulder. She went down to the spring and drew water. And I said to her, please give me a drink. She quickly lowered her jar from her shoulder and said, drink. And I'll water your camels too. So I drank and she watered the camels too also. I asked her, whose daughter are you? She said, the daughter of Bethuel, son of Nahor, who Milcah bore to him. You go on.
So I put the nose ring on her nose and the bracelet on her wrist. And I bowed my head and worshipped the Lord and blessed the Lord God of my master Abraham, who had led me the way of truth to take the daughter of my master's brother for his son. Now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me, and if not, tell me that I may turn to the right hand or to the left. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, the thing comes from the Lord, and we cannot speak to you either bad or good. Here is Rebekah before you. Take her and go, and let her be your master's son's wife, as the Lord has spoken. And it came to pass, when Abraham's servant heard their words, that he worshipped the Lord, bowing himself to the earth. Then the servant brought out jewelry of silver, jewelry of gold, and clothing, and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave precious things to her brother and to her mother. And he and the men who were with him ate and drank and stayed all night. Then they arose in the morning, and he said, "Send me away to my master." But her brother and her mother said, "Let the young woman stay with us a few days, at least 10. After that, she may go."
He answered them, "Don't delay me, since Adonai has made my trip successful, but let me go back to my master." They said, "We will call the girl and see what she says." They called Rivka and asked her, "Will you go with this man?" And she replied, "I will." So they sent their sister Rivka away with her nurse, Abraham's servant, and his men. They blessed Rivka with these words, "Our sister, may you be the mother of millions, and may your descendants possess the cities of those who build them." Then Rivka and her maids mounted camels and followed the man. So the servant took Rivka and went on his way. 62.
Now Isaac had come from a trip to the well of Machpelah, where he was living in the south. He had gone out in the field for his twilight meditations, and looking out, he saw camels coming. Rebekah looked up too. When she saw Isaac, she slid down from the camel and asked the servant, "Who is that man over there walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant replied, "That is my master." She therefore took her veil and covered herself. The servant told Isaac everything he had done, and Isaac conducted her inside his mother Sarah's tent. He married Rebekah. She became his wife, and he came to love her. So Isaac found consolation after his mother's death.
Thank you. Have you heard this before? This is the third time around, basically, right? I mean, he's reviewing all that just happened last week, right? If we look back, yes, in verse earlier in chapter 24, in the beginning, right? Abraham is blessed and he sends his servant. And that's so it takes place. And then the servant narrates for us from verse 42 onward and even before, right, all that's happened. So this is a second or sometimes third time around of the same information. What are some of the connections that were made in last week's reading? Do you remember? How many people were here again? Two, three? Do you remember some of the connections? What were the highlights that Gary or Sharon that brought out? I want to hear a little bit from you, since we are dealing with some of the same material.
We didn't actually do as much on what you might call this bit of the story. We spent a lot of time on the oath, which the servant swore right at the beginning.
Okay.
And then there was quite a bit about the angel leading him.
Okay.
And there was quite a bit of discussion about them living in separate areas, Hebron and Beersheba, and whether in fact there was
a rift in the
split.
Uh-huh.
So that was very interesting, and that there is hope after divorce. And in divorce, I know there's hope after divorce.
For the record, Randall did not agree that they were divorced.
Okay, so it's Randall.
Sharon's idea.
There could be other ideas, right? A summer home, a winter home. This happens. This happens regularly. I maybe you know many Arab people who have a couple homes historically, right? One in Hebron, one in Jerusalem, or you know, different things, or Jericho, or.
And there was quite a lot about Rivka being tough, being able to pull up water, carry water for 10 camels, and the sort of girl she was.
And the Haftarah portion, does anybody remember what that was? I'm trying to bring it up.
I'm not sure we got there.
You never, the Haftarah, the...
We did. We got to Judges.
One of the highlights, I guess, of this Narkees Street Bible study these days is to make the connections between the Torah portion and the prophets.
Yeah.
Right? This is going back to what seems to be an ancient land of Israel tradition for the first 5-10 centuries that was used here in the land, whereby the Torah portion would not be read in 1 year, but would be read over 3 years, right? So, yeah. So this is, I think, one of the things that's trying to bring out the connections. Why did the people connect this Torah portion with a certain specific prophets section, right?
I think last week it was to do with the whole concept of testing. Because Judges 3 starts with the Lord left a test, and there'd been a testing before.
Kind of to see, with Eleazar testing the ground to see if he's really going to bless him in his mission. Maybe, is that the connection?
No, it was 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, okay.
Oh, so I'm on the wrong week, am I?
And the oath.
Yeah, that's last week right
there. You're right.
Okay, so the testing was...
Last 2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago, okay.
It was the oath.
The oath. Right, yeah. That's... That is a colorful subject or something. Yeah, okay.
It became quite colorful.
Well, this Torah portion and our Haftarah, our prophet's portion, is wonderful. I mean, it's beautiful. I'm thankful that you guys didn't then highlight the love story that's going on, right? Or and these water sources that are a theme with between our connections. We'll see.
We got near that. We started.
You started doing that. Okay. So
testing the waters. Yeah.
You've mentioned, I guess, in weeks past, right? And it's obvious. You know, Rebecca. She is a strong woman. She's bringing out lots of water.
Yeah.
And there's a time when women are going to the water. It specifies in our passage, right? It's in the evening. It's not the heat of day, and so people are women. Women specifically, I guess, at this time were probably rejoicing or talking. It's a time of work, of drawing water, but it's also a time of sharing news and connecting with other people, right? So our triennial cycle has connected us with Isaiah chapter 12. So maybe we can read this passage now and be listening to some of the themes. Be thinking of what we've just heard and relating it to what we're now going to read and see where our triennial cyclist made these connections. That's right. So, I mean, here we have, and this is the only portion, what Gemma's saying is, in Isaiah chapter 12, the only portion of the the prophet section that we're going to read that is utilized by rabbinic tradition is the very beginning of Isaiah chapter 12. Our Haftarah starts in Isaiah 12 verse 3. So if we can turn there, Isaiah 12 verse 3.
It's amazing.
And maybe I'd like to read the first two verses too. There is discussion where the Haftarah portion begins, right? A few verses before, a few verses after. I think there are some connections also in the first couple of verses as well. So would anybody like to volunteer to begin reading? I can. Isaiah 12, verse 1, even though technically our internet says verse 3, but verse 1.
Make known among the nations what he has done.
That is a beautiful passage. It is a rich liturgical tradition, both within Isaiah here, within the Psalms. We're going to be talking more about this. What's the obvious connection so far that we've... Yes?
Just a question. Could you read the end of verse 1 again?
Nicole, you mind?
The end of verse 1.
Yeah, sure.
Although you were angry with me, your anger has turned away and you have comforted me.
Is that what everybody says?
That's what I thought.
Says that.
he says
What have you got?
Don't any of them say, let your anger turn away? And may you...
Let's go. He's worrying.
End of verse 1.
Not anymore.
Your anger is turned away and you comfort me.
Maybe it's essay, but in the VHS they have changes of the right of this one verb.
How is it really different?
In Hebrew it says Yashov, Yashov says it's automatic
to tell you.
Fetz ki, Yashov. Yashov, Selo Shav, Yashov. May your anger, it's a prayer, it's a request, it's a wish, not a fact. Ine Dov, Ulu Yadid Lanu.
Hey, dog! Shabbat shalom.
Okay, so... not anymore. No, this is for you. So, okay, so in chapter 12...
Dov, you okay there?
We have a prayer, and it talks about a day. It talks about a desire for comfort, according to the MT, right? Verse 2, God is our Yeshua, our salvation.
And springs of water.
And now we get to verse 3, which is where our connection technically begins.
Is the word in Hebrew in verse 1 for comforted me the same word as at the end
where
of...
Where are we now?
Yes. We're in Isaiah chapter 12.
But it's not you comforted me.
We'll kind of return.
It's made you comfort me.
So it's not the same word.
It is the same word, but it's not saying you comforted me.
Is it okay if I use this one?
Apparently the English translations have all made this a fact, something that happened, but the Hebrew makes it a prayer, something they want to happen.
My question simply was, is the word where Rivka is comforted after the death... I mean, Isaac is comforted after the death of his mother. She read us consoled, and we've got us comforted. Is it the same word?
Yeah.
It is.
Well, it's a different form of the same word.
Yeah.
It's Vayinah
Isaiah 12. Yeah.
So the same root.
Right.
Isaiah 12.
What's happening in him and us, actively, he's comforting from us.
Right.
And in verse 3, we want to get to the main focus, I think, of the connection, right? What is it? How does it read? Verse 3? Behold, God, sorry. Therefore, you will joyously draw water from the springs of salvation. And this verse, or in Hebrew, the Yeshua, Ushaftemayim,
V'sasomimayim, Yeshua.
Amen. So, this is a common phrase. Why do we know it so well? That's right. It's a part of the Shabbat liturgy that has crept into other avenues and other places too, like the Biblical Language Center. Motzei Shabbat, the Havdalah ceremony, and it's now taught by the BLC community of learning. But it's also found in many other locations as far as a seminal theme. We're going to come to that. But we can emphasize, just generally speaking now, that Rivka is drawing water from the well, right? And this is a joyous time. Why is it joyous?
She's going to get engaged.
That's right. She's going to veil herself. She's off to meet her husband, right? And so this is a very joyous time, a salvific time, a time of jubilation. What are some other connections that we might see? We read through the end of chapter 12, right? Anything else that you see?
Hey, Danny, a good question. Why is it salvific?
Yeah.
You could point out that in the Bible, success is viewed as salvation. Mm. Like, we tend to think of it as a very abstract, you know, we're saved from sin for eternity,
yeah.
Which it also is, but Yeshua, any solving of your problem is
right.
Called salvation.
Okay.
And so when the...
We think of Jericho.
...says, when you succeed my way, and then you use it as an answer to prayer, that is then salvation because it solved his problem of where am I going to find this girl.
Come.
And being single is a problem.
No, I'm saying his mission was to find this wife for... You know,
nope. What Danny has said is true. Single womanhood in the Bible is problematic.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are on your own. That's not the case today. But in Bible times, you were on your own, and so it was salvific in many ways. I was thinking of the verse in the New Testament, salvation has come to this house today. When he's repented, when things have changed, there's wholeness. You know, coming from a Methodist, you know, a social gospel, right? Salvation for Methodists has to do with feeding the hungry in Neri and Jai or something, and has almost nothing to do with the gospel message, right? So, I mean, okay, this is the pendulum. So salvation definitely is not only entrance into heaven. In the broader Hebrew, Jewish, and Christian world.
But also biblically... What you've got running all the way through is always the concept of descendants. And Isaac's not going to get a descendant till he's got his wife. She's not going to be part of this descendants. So, I mean, the whole concept...
Progeny, that's
progeny,
right.
Yeah, progeny is a better word than descendants. Progeny, inheritance,
so
where it's going.
So we have a very joyful scene. I want to emphasize, anything else that you might have thought of, verses 1 through 6? Connection with Genesis chapter 24, verses 42 through 67. Yes?
Well, I did connect the Naham.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought about it. Just,
in verse 1, you're talking.
Verse 1, they connected back with the fact that it's used in the Isaac is comforted in the coming of Rivka. Made the idea that. Because in the past readings, we looked at how Sarah is Jerusalem and all these kinds of ideas of like the people in Israel are still awaiting this promise that's foretold in Isaiah about like return from exile and all this return of the kingdom. And maybe this is kind of a promise that God will return the rest of the
So you're connecting the comforting of Isaiah 12:1 with what in Genesis 12?
It's in Isaiah.
Comforted by his wife.
Okay, but with the Genesis passage.
Yeah, with the comforting of Isaac.
Right, okay, that's what I wanted to hear. Okay, so at the very end of our Genesis 24 passage, he is married with Rivka, right? And he is overcoming his sorrow because of his mother's death, right?
Taken her for what? He's not married, he has taken her for
what? Okay, taken his wife, and that is comforting him in the midst of his sorrow after his mother's passing.
Verse 67.
Last verse 67 of Genesis 24. So, okay, so it's a comforting theme there. And you're broadening it out, which I think is nice because we're going there later on in the rest of our Haftarah portion of, what did you say, Tran? Of a comforting, not just of Isaac here, right, but of the people of Israel.
Yeah.
Right? So we're going to see this as a broader theme. And the patriarchs really are emblematic, or symbolic, right, of the people of Israel, right? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Israel, named, right? And then we're going to see later on in our Haftarah how this comes to be maybe a dominant theme. Maybe these two themes of rejoicing of the water from the well and the comforting and return of the people of Israel, Jacob, are maybe some of the two leitmotifs, the major themes that we're going to see here. Okay, one little high, well, very small, but connection is the what and why women to read verse 1 is that it says, then you will say on that day, and we have a little bit of a connection, right, on that day. It's highlighted more in Isaiah. The day takes a much stronger position as the day of the Lord, and we see that I think four times. in chapter 13 and chapter 14, which is a continuation of our passage. So we've only read chapter 12, verses 3 through the end, but it includes all of chapter 13 and through 14 too. So we're not all the way through, and we're going to get to that comforting theme, and we'll see how this theme of the day of the Lord, the day, maybe the moment of God's presence, right, which is a very small sub-theme in Genesis 24, is now highlighted in Isaiah. Let's continue.
I was thinking, though, it's getting a bit too deep for me, but that in terms of, in the Isaiah thing, you have, I will praise the Lord, give praise to the Lord, proclaim his name, sing to the Lord, for he's done glorious things. And what I read when I was reading the Genesis chapter is at every moment of this, of the whole story, the servant thanks the Lord, he bows down, he worships, he praises the Lord for what he's done and how he's working out the whole story.
Yes.
And to me, there's a very, very strong link there.
Right. So prayer is hinted at. In Genesis 24, he spoke to his heart even before he finished speaking, speaking to the Lord, and then praise in Isaiah 12. Yes, I think there's a theme here, and we're going to come back to that prayer aspect a little bit later on when we talk about Eliezer, the servant. Who is he? And what is he doing? He's praying. But we're going to see that and Isaac as well in the field and such. Okay, let's continue on to make some more loose connections between the two biblical passages, and then we'll dig a little deeper. So, chapter 13. Any volunteer to read? This is not quite as joyous a section. Isaiah chapter 13. Yeah. And we can take chunks. You don't have to read the whole thing. If not, I'll read.
The oracle concerning Babylon, which Isaiah the son of Amoz saw in a vision. On the bare summit of the mountain, raise a banner, and shout aloud to them. Wave a hand that they may enter the gates of the nobles. For I have commanded those dedicated to me, I myself have summoned my strong warriors, even my proudly exalted ones, to execute my anger. Listen, an uproar on the mountains as a great multitude. Listen, an uproar of kingdoms, of nations assembled. The Lord of hosts is mustering a battle host. They come from a distant land, from the end of heaven. The Lord and the weapons of his indignation to destroy the whole earth. Wail, for the day of the Lord is at hand. As destruction from the Almighty will it come. Therefore, all hands shall hang helpless. Every man's heart will grow weak with fear. They will become dismayed. Pain and agonies will seize them. They will arrive like a woman in travail. One will gaze in amazement at another, with their faces aflame.
He will today the Lord comes, cruel, both wrath and fierce anger, to lay the land desolate, and he will destroy its sinners from it. For the stars of heaven and their constellations will not give their light. The sun will darken in its going forth, and the moon will not cause its light to shine. I will punish the world for its evil and the wicked for their iniquity. I will halt the arrogance of the proud and will lay low the haughtiness of the terrible. I will make a mortal more rare than fine gold, a man more than the golden wedge of Ophir. Therefore, I will shake the heavens, and the earth will move out of her place in the wrath of the Lord of hosts, and in the day of his fierce anger. It shall be as the hunted gazelle, and as the sheep that no man takes up. Every man will turn to his own people, and everyone will flee to his own land. Everyone who is found will be crushed through, and everyone who is captured will fall by his sword. Their children also will be dashed to pieces before their eyes. Their houses will be plundered, and their wives ravished. Behold, I will stir the deeds against them who will not regard silver. And as for gold, they will not delight in it.
What What verse are we now?
We're 18.
Thank you. 18?
Can you go all the way through?
Please.
Their bowels will strike down the young men. They will have no mercy on infants, nor will they look with compassion on children. Babylon, the jewel of kingdoms, the glory of the Babylonians, pride, will be overthrown by God, like Sodom and Gomorrah. She will never be inhabited or lived in through all generations. No Arab will pitch his tent there. No shepherd will rest his flocks there. But desert creatures will lie there. Jackals will fill her houses where the owls will dwell. There the owls will dwell. And there the wild goats will leap about. Hyenas will howl in her strongholds. Jackals in her luxurious palaces. Her time is at hand and her days will not be prolonged.
We have two more verses. So, yeah. It goes through 14:2.
Oh, sorry. The Lord will have compassion on Jacob once again. He will choose Israel and will settle them in their own land. Aliens will join them and unite with the house of Jacob. Nations will take them and bring them to their own place. And the house of Israel will possess the nations, as men servants and maid servants in the Lord's land. They will make captives of their captors and rule over their oppressors.
Those last two verses are pretty significant after a whole chapter of just lambasting
Babylon
and almost in a sense praising Babylon. I mean, it's Isaiah is the time of Assyria, right? So he's giving a foretaste of what's going to be coming, and it's going to look like
Isaiah. Although it mentions Medes.
Time of Assyrians, right?
He's the time of Assyrians.
Yeah. So he's in the end of the 8th century. The Babylonians are coming up in the 6th century, right? So we've got about 150 years or so between, according to most conservative or most understandings of Isaiah, right? Isaiah is living at the end of the 700s.
So what he's saying,
right,
is going to happen.
Is going to happen
in 200
150 years, 120 years.
Medes who come after the Babylonian Medes, right, and the Persians. But in chapter 13, it's a second coming language because it's global. It's say something globally, not.
It seems he says it was interesting in 13:5 when one person was reading it was going to destroy the whole earth.
Yeah,
well,
that's
there it's
global.
But that's an interesting translation.
Yes.
It might be land, right? As in
I've
this land
far away
or
lands.
Faraway lands. It's probably talking not the whole planet, right? Right, but
this is what we have in the second tongue.
We can't understand prophecy. It has second lives. It's like a cat, right? 9 lives. Prophecy can be reused and should be carefully. You know, we see that in Matthew. You know, my servant has gone down to Israel. Well, that's not talking about Jesus. And then all of a sudden, it's related to Jesus. That's a nice use, right? So we can and appreciate that. But here we want to at least first gather the first pshat, you know, the first sort of basic understanding. And Isaiah is writing of this coming time when there's going to be such destruction that it ends up turning like the jackals and the hyenas, like the Lion King, right? So a desolate land. You have that vision of the hyenas prowling around? Something like this. No, you don't think so? Okay. He didn't see the Lion King. Okay. No, the hyenas are important. They get a bad reputation, right? But they are the they are the grave diggers. If it wasn't for the hyenas, they, you know, nobody can chew through bones, I guess, like hyenas, and clean things up. And so they process things in a way that needs to happen. Anyway, that's not what Isaiah is getting after. Okay, Isaiah is getting after this great destruction that's going to take place, which is going to result in Israel being destroyed, along with what seems to be the enemy of Israel at this time, which is Assyria. Nineveh, right? Jonah goes there and prophesies he doesn't want to go there. It's like going to the heart of ISIS today. Why would I want to go to the heart of ISIS and proclaim, you know, that sounds ridiculous, right? So Jonah didn't want to do that. Here, Isaiah is letting Assyria know that their end is coming and Babylon's coming along, right? And also Israel, in the midst of this massive skirmish, is also going to suffer. But at the very end, what happens? Chapter 14.
God has mercy on
compassion.
compassion. Yeah, he kind of re-chooses, right? He again chooses Israel. He affirms. And what does it say